A interesting Shiloh came up today. As we know, we are dealing with a population of very sick children, and we are doing our best to try to provide relief and comfort and well-being to all of them. Now, part of that experience is that sometimes, unfortunately, a camper will not have a major appetite, as we spoke last night briefly, and after a camper lets us know something that does excite them to eat, so the camper will inform us that they want something in particular that maybe we were not planning on serving. We tried to the best of our ability to provide them with that, within reason. So today we had for lunch the cook, the chef, thank you, Zachar Latov. He made a delicious meal, and he was serving completely milchiks. He was serving lasagna or whatever it may have been, and it was milchiks. One of the campers who is having a very hard time finding something that they are comfortable eating at this point. They did not eat last night. They did not eat anything this morning. And finally, at this point, the camper said that she has a craving for a hot dog. So kosher hot dogs, no problem. We have plenty of them in the kitchen. And the waitresses were very gracious, and they went inside and made sure that the hot dog was going to be made. They then came out to me and said, hey, we're serving a milchig meal. How are we supposed to serve the hot dog? So that is actually a very interesting question. Let's get into the sugya a little bit, and let's try to understand. I hope to end off with a chiddush. I hope people will appreciate it, and I think it's interesting. So let's just begin the sugya and see what this is all about. So the Mishnah writes in Maseches Chulin, Kuf Gimel Amud Beis, that if you have somebody who's eating meat, they cannot be sitting at the same table as somebody who is eating gvina al hashulchan. Somebody who is eating milk at the same table would not be able to be there. And the Gemara says, Tzarech sheyasu heker beinehem. They have to make some kind of recognizable separation between the two of them. Now, what kind of heker does the Gemara assume has to be made? So the Gemara says you can make something that is gavoa, you can put a menorah there, put a flashlight, put something that's unusual, something that stands out. When I'm sitting and somebody else is sitting next to me and in between us we have something which we both recognize and we both notice, that would be something that would be good enough. But it has to be something that is not normally there. So to take my cell phone, put it on the table, that's not a heker. Why? Because very often we take a cell phone out, put it on the table. To take a sefer and put it on the table, also, very often, it depends what kind of house you have, but very often you have svarim on the table. So it has to be something that is out of the ordinary, something that's not normally there, and that would be the heker that would stand between the two individuals who are eating milchigs and fleishigs. That's what the Gemara says. Now, why is it that we have a concern? You're eating what you're eating, I'm eating what I'm eating. Says the Gemara, we have a concern that maybe if I see something that looks nice on your plate and we happen to be very friendly with each other, so maybe I'm going to reach over at some point during the meal and I'm going to take something from your plate and I'm going to put it on mine and I'm going to then violate the Isra of eating basar and chalav within the same meal. Fine, that's what the Gemara says. We turn to a fascinating Gemara Maseches Shabbos where the Mishnah tells us on Daf Yud Aleph that we have a very similar parallel halacha when it comes to Hilchos Nida. So here the Mishnah says, Kayotze bo lo yochal hazav imazava mipnei hergal aveira. If you have a Nida and her husband, so the two of them cannot sit at a table and eat together either. The Gemara then goes on to tell us a very shocking story, Maisa b'Talmud Echad. The Gemara quotes this from Tana Deve Elio, so it's a mimer from Elio Anavi, where we're told that there was a Talmud Echad, Shoshana Harbe, Vikara Harbe, Vishimish Talmud Chachamim Harbe. He was a great Talmud Chacham, he was doing all the right things in his life, and then he Mais b'chatzi yamav. He died at a very young age, and his wife was so distraught, his wife was so upset, not just because her husband passed away, which is obviously very upsetting, but she said, I didn't just have a regular husband. My husband was a tzaddik. How could it be? And it says that she would come every day to the Beis Medrash with his tefillin, and she would cry to them, how could it be that my husband, the big tzaddik, passed away at such a young age? It doesn't make sense. He did everything right in his life. So the Gemara says that they asked her, what kind of behavior did he have at home? What did he do? So he said she said he was a wonderful husband. He was a great person. He did everything right. He made brachas. He went to shul every day. He put on his tefillin. He did what he was supposed to do. So then they asked him, what did he do? How did he behave when you were a nida? She said, chas v'shalom afila be'etzba k'tana lo nagabi. When I was a nida, he made sure to follow the halacha. He didn't get near me. He made sure to follow everything he was supposed to do, and he was machmir on himself. So that doesn't make sense. So then they asked him, oh, and what did he do during the Shiva Nikiyim? When you hadn't yet gone to the mikveh, but you weren't still menstruating, so what did he do then? So the Gemara says, oh, then he said, what's the problem? No iser? And they say, oh, that's why. He wasn't careful with the harchakos. That must be the reason. Now, that's a very dangerous territory to go down. I'm going to start explaining why somebody died, why they didn't die. Interesting Gemara. But that's what the Gemara says. And from here, We learn in Shulchan Aruch that when an ishto nida, they're not supposed to eat together either unless they have some kind of separation, unless they have some kind of hekker. In fact, it's a mazel, we're lucky that we paskin like the Rambam. The Ravid is of the opinion that they're not even allowed to eat al shulchan echad. They have to eat on separate tables. The Rambam says, no, let's not get carried away. The Rambam says, shulchan echad is fine, as long as they're eating on shtei ka'aros. You have your plate, I have my plate, and we have a hekker in between. That would be sufficient. So, actually, Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he discusses, what's the halacha if in the middle of the table you have a serving platter? So what's the problem? Each of us are going to take a piece of chicken. I'm having my plate with my plate, and you're having your plate with yours. Not a problem. He agrees to that. However, Rav Moshe says, what happens when you have a dip in the middle of the table? And it's customary that people take a piece of bread and dip it into the olive dip or whatever it is that you have, the eggplant in the middle of the table, and throughout the meal, both parties are doing that at the same time sometimes. So Rav Moshe says, that's an interesting chiddush. Maybe that's not the same as a serving tray, because a serving tray, you take what you need and you go back to your seat. Over here, you don't take what you need and go back to your seat. Very often, you could have two people with their hands in there at the same time. So anyway, it's an interesting discussion. And in fact, the Achronim of our generation, the Poskim of our generation, have a discussion when the Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara describe this. It says, you're not allowed to eat together with Ishto Nida. There has to be a separation. How come the Gemara doesn't talk about drinking? What if the two of us are sitting down to a drink? So the Tzitz Eliezer argues, I didn't have a chance to look it up today, but I think he says that who would ever share a cup with somebody else, even if it's your spouse? Who would ever share a cup with somebody else? And therefore he says you have nothing to be concerned about. Rabbi Vadia says, I don't know where you live, but where I live, of course I would share a cup with my spouse. And therefore he says the same halacha that applies to Ishto Nida when we're talking about eating together would apply when they're having something to drink together as well. We have the same chashash, and therefore the Gemara would assume that we have to make some kind of heker. Okay, that's what the halacha is. The Aruch HaShulchan actually writes, would the halacha be the same? Do we assume that the same kind of separation that's needed for basa b'chalav, if one person's eating meat and one is eating milk, would that same separation be sufficient for ishto nida, or would you say it has to be different? Are those the same threshold of separation that are needed? So the Aruch HaShulchan discusses it, and he says, this is an interesting halacha. Writes the Aruch HaShulchan, when we have basar b'chalav, the concern is you're eating basar, I'm eating chalav. If I reach over the table and take something from your plate, we have a concern that I'm going to end up eating basar b'chalav. But when ishto nida is eating, we serve dinner, two pieces of chicken. You have chicken, I have chicken. You have vegetables, I have vegetables. You have salad, I have salad. Why would I reach over to your plate? I have the same thing that you have. When there's basar and chalav, there's a concern. Maybe I'm going to reach over the table and take from you. But when we both have the same thing, you need less of a heker, says the Aruch HaShulchan, because there's less of a concern when both parties are eating the same thing. There's an interesting discussion in the postgame. What about when I'm eating a fleishig meal, am I allowed to have a children's bottle on the table that has milk in it? So the postgame all say it doesn't seem to be a problem. Why not? Because when was the last time you went to have breakfast with cereal, you're looking around for the milk, you can't find the bottle of milk, oh, let me take the baby's bottle, open it up, and pour some milk into there. Nobody would ever do that. Once you pour the baby's milk into the bottle, it's designated for the baby, you don't get near that thing, and you let the kid take their bottle, and nobody else would take it. And therefore, that's why it would not be considered a concern at all. Chametz b'Pesach. What?
What's the concern with Ishtonida? What is the actual...
The concern is, since we're sitting together, and we're not allowed to have kirav basar, so it's gonna lead to us coming closer and closer, and then it's gonna lead to something more.
Right away, you have Isser Basar B'chalav. If you reach over and eat, but we're talking about the whole process in order to get to where it's.
Sometimes it doesn't take.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's what it says. The Shach and the Magen Avraham, the Mishneh Berurah, all discuss what happens if you have somebody who's eating chametz b'Pesach. So I have a goy who's sitting next to me eating chametz b'Pesach, or a Jew who's not keeping the mitzvah. So, would I be allowed to eat near that person? Would you say the same kind of heker? So the Mishneh Berurah says, well, by Chametz Pesach, we're even more machmir. Why? Because we assume Chametz Pesach is b'mashehu, that even a little drop of chametz would make a problem for me on Pesach. So the likelihood of our plates getting mixed up and one crumb coming from his plate to my plate is higher, and therefore we would assume that a heker would not even be sufficient. You would have to do more than that. There's actually discussion, Rabbi Kiva Eger and others have a discussion, would it be good enough to have a shomer? So if I have two people sitting and eating, one's eating basar, one's eating chalav, would it be good enough to have a shomer? Like today, when the camper wanted to have basar, when the rest of the camp was having chalav, and the waitress said, I'm going to stand here, I'll watch, I'll make sure nothing happens. So Rabbi Kiva Eger says, A shomer, how could a shomer assume that they're going to be standing there the whole time that people are eating? A waitress, certainly, or a counselor, has a million other things going on, many other people pulling for their attention. Says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, you cannot assume that someone's going to stand there the entire duration of the time that they're eating and watch over them like a hawk. And therefore, he says, of course you need a hecker even if you have a shomer there. It's interesting that I once saw that Rabbi Yashiv writes in one of his svarim that perhaps he can bring a raya that a shomer would be sufficient. Why? Because the Mefarshim ask, Avraham Avinu invites the Malachim into his house. Vayika chema v'chalav, uvena bakar asher asa. What does Avraham Avinu make for them? He prepares chema v'chalav, is butter and cheese, and then he takes also a whole animal, and he makes fleishiks, he makes milchiks. All the Achronim ask, oh, how could he do it, basar v'chalav, and Avraham Avinu kiyim kala Torah kula? So how could he serve them basar and chalav at the same time? Right, Rabbi Yashiv, that's why the Pasuk says, V'hu omeid aleihem tachas ha'etz v'yachelu. That Avraham Avinu served as the shomer. He was standing there making sure, he's being the mashgiach, making sure if you're eating meat, you should eat meat. If you're eating milk, you should eat milk. And no one's going to mix their plates together. And that was why the Pasuk says, V'hu omeid aleihem. What does it have to say? Avraham Avinu stood there. Of course he stood there. It was in his house. Where do you think he went? Think he ran away? He had guests there. So anyway, that's an interesting discussion whether or not a shomer would be sufficient. I thought in this camp, maybe there's a little bit more room to be makel. Why is there more room to be makel, maybe even without a hecker? I thought maybe there's room to be makel without a hecker for the following reason. There's a discussion in the Shaf, what happens if you have someone who's muder hana mechaveru? What if you have two people, one of them makes a neder, I will never get any benefit from you. Not only from you, from anything that belongs to you, from anything that has to do with you, from anything you ever touch. Muder hana mechaveru, I don't want to get near you. Are those two people, turns out they end up in the same office, the same building, and they sit next to each other. Would those two people be allowed to sit next to each other, or would they require a hecker? Shulchan Aruch says no hecker needed. Why? Explains the Shach. They hate each other. Obviously, why would I take a nether upon myself not to touch anything that belongs to you? I obviously hate you. If I hate you that much, that means I'm never going to touch anything on your plate, so you have nothing to worry about. Zach the Shach, if you hate somebody that much that you took a nether upon yourself, you have nothing to be concerned about. That's what he says. I thought in this camp, where you have campers that are so conscious of germs and infection, and they're worried to share something from one to the other because they don't want to transmit any germs that they don't have, I thought maybe that would be enough. That's the same as sonim zezeh. I would never touch something on your plate because I'm concerned that maybe I'm going to get an infection from you. I don't want to get near your germs, and therefore, if you have that kind of boundary and that kind of barrier between the two parties in question, maybe there would be a reason to be makel that we shouldn't even need a hecker at all. We should allow the person to sit without making any separation at all. You're going to do your food, I'm going to do my food, and we can sit one next to the other. The problem is, I was talking to my wife today, I asked her, what happens in the baking room? She said, no, all the kids, their hands are all over the place. They're not so makbid to be careful that you don't touch mine, I don't touch yours. If I use the sprinkles, you use the sprinkles. I'm sorry, Dr. Steiners, but she told me that sometimes they do share things with each other, so maybe this is not sufficient. Maybe that would not be good enough. What they ended up doing in the dining room was very beautiful. They did order a bunch of fancy placemats that stick out, and the counselors and the waitresses are going to make them very special. They're coloring them, whatever they're doing on them, and it is a hecker. That's good enough. If you have something that makes it very recognizable that this person, for whatever reason, is sitting differently than somebody else, that would be sufficient. Why don't you just tell them, sit at a different table, go sit at a different side of the dining room. So that's not the flavor of what we do here. We don't want people to stick out. We don't want them to be different. And that would be a sufficient reason to allow them to remain at the table with the group, with everybody else, but to do it with a mappa, to do it with a tablecloth that differentiates what they're eating from what everybody else at the table is eating. And that would be good enough.